Welcome back to Kilkenny Today. It's Monday, which means it's time for our weekly Astronomy Ireland Skywatch with David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. Now, if you've looked up at the night sky recently, you may have spotted something extraordinary. The International Space Station, ISS, shining bright, brighter than any star. But time is running out to catch this incredible sight, as it was only visible for 5 more evenings. Davis, it's great to be talking to you.
Thanks very much, Elaine.
Davis, I suppose we'll get straight into it now. I've done a bit of research here and I've learnt a lot about what we're going to chat about today, but I'm sure you're going to tell our listeners a lot more. So, Davis, the GMV's looping system aims to bring GPS-like navigation to the moon. How significant is this development for future lunar exploration, especially with missions and potential lunar bases on the horizon?
Yeah, the moon is becoming a hot topic of exploration again. I mean, it was a bit of an anomaly that we had landed people on the moon back in 1969, and then nothing much has happened since 1972. But now everybody's looking at the moon. The Chinese have had rovers there. India's landed on the moon with a rover craft as well. And private companies have done the same. So things are hotting up. And the big story will be when NASA intends landing people on the moon in a couple of years' time. So there will actually be a manned presence again. So with all this activity going on, they've realized navigating around the moon is not that easy. And if we had a GPS system for the moon, then things will be a lot easier. We could send rovers, map the place. People could find their way around very accurately like we can here on the Earth. I think we all probably rely too much on the GPS system that Earth has.
Yeah.
But, you know, we can learn from all the research we did to build it and put it on the moon. And a European Space Agency contract given to a Spanish company has produced this Lupin system that they tested out.
Yeah, and I see it was tested in the Canary Islands, which mimics the moon's terrain. Is that correct?
Yeah, I don't know if you've been on the tours when you go to the Canary Islands, which are volcanic islands, and they take you around the volcanoes. And one thing I remember them mentioning, first trip I did there, was how they actually got the astronauts who went to the moon to go to the Canary Islands because they reckoned the terrain would be very similar to that. So it's a great place within the European Union to test out a moon-based navigation system. So they actually put it to the test, and apparently things went very well. All they'll have to do now is put some satellites in orbit around the moon to make it all work for real. But that's part of the plan.
Exactly, and it's quite interesting now to be comparing the Canary Islands to the moon. Like, you know, it could be a holiday destination now next, Davis. But I suppose, Davis, the current lunar navigation relies on Earth-based signals, which can be slow and imprecise. How does the real-time system like the Lupin change the game of for rovers and astronauts, particularly in the area like the Moon, Farside and South Pole?
Yeah, well, on the Earth we used a GPS system, which originally was a US military system, which they eventually deregulated and allowed civilians to use it. The European Space Agency wasn't overly happy with that because you're relying on an American military system. But they could technically shut down single-handedly if they wanted to. So we've launched the Galileo system, which is similar to GPS, even a bit more accurate. The Russians have a system. The Chinese have one or are building one as well. So there are multiple GPS-style systems around the Earth. And you can pick these up from the moon, but they were never meant to be used for navigating on the moon. And of course, if you're on the far side of the moon, you can't see the Earth, so you wouldn't be able to detect any of those satellites anyway. And also, it takes radio signals 1.5 seconds to get from the moon to the Earth. So there's going to be a lag that way as well. So in all, it's not ideal. It can be used for low accuracy navigation, but ultimately you want your own GPS orbiting the moon, same as we have on this particular planet.
And now,
so there are going to be challenges getting the whole thing operational, but lunar exploration is definitely what's coming in the next decade.
Brilliant. And I suppose, David, one thing, because I was trying to explain what this Lupin system was earlier, how would you describe what this looks like to people?
Well, the whole idea of these navigation systems based on satellites is that if you have a whole suite of them, dozens of them in orbit, then you can usually see three or four from the ground, and they're transmitting a very accurate time signal. And if your little receiver figures out when each satellite is talking to you, because of the delay, I mean, radio signals move at the speed of light, you know, 186,000 miles per second, but you can time it accurately enough down to a few meters and determine your position by triangulating with lots of complicated mathematics. It's all built into your little GPS receiver. You don't have to worry about, but you do have to have the satellites up there. They have to have extremely accurate clocks on board, and then you have to have receivers on the ground that are going to be able to pick everything up and do those calculations for you. Not difficult for space agencies, but like you said, one day there'll be space tourists on the moon, and they'll be carrying, it'll probably work on your mobile phone like it does here on the Earth in a few decades' time.
Brilliant, and you explained that a lot better to me, David. And I suppose, David, beyond exploration, GVM mentions this could be a stepping stone towards Mars. Do you think lunar navigation systems like Lupin are essential before humans can safely venture to the red planet? Or are there even greater challenges awaiting us there?
Well, ultimately, you know, people like Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos have both gone on public record and stated that they are going to put 1 million people on Mars by the end of this century. Now, they're the two richest men in the world. They both own space companies. So if anybody else said it, you'd think they were crazy. But they must have sat down and worked this out carefully. And a million is ridiculous. There have been just over 600 people in space in all of human history. So to think that a million will end up on Mars in less than 100 years, it does sound a bit crazy. But I've seen some of the rockets these people are building and their determination. And you have to think, you know, they've got the money, they've got the space companies, they know what they're doing. Having another GPS system on Mars, you know, if you've done one for Earth, you've done one for the Moon, you'll probably just buy it off the shelf for Mars. It won't be that simple, but it's definitely doable. In the meantime, the first people going there can land, just like Neil Armstrong, an Irishman, by the way, and Buzz Aldrin did when they set foot on the Moon in 1969. They had no GPS system to help them navigate. And in the future, it would be a lot easier than that, but I reckon the first explorers to Mars won't be benefiting from a GPS system then. But companies like GMV have developed this Lupin system. I'm sure they can develop one for Mars if somebody has a big enough checkbook.
It always comes down to the money, doesn't it, David? Money talks, as they say. And
Space exploration is very expensive. For instance, it costs around 10,000 euros, dollars, they're the same these days, to put up a kilogram into space. So, you know, if you can find, for instance, water on the moon, mapping the moon and finding where there's water in deep craters, saves you a fortune on bringing water up, which people, of course, need, but also you can make rocket fuel from it. Rocket fuel can be made from water and sunlight, basically.
Well, every day is a school day, they say, David. But I suppose, David, we'll move away from the Lupin system for a minute. Now, the International Space Station is currently visible in our skies. How long more will we actually have an opportunity to see this?
Yeah, and space exploration is happening above our heads. You can watch it live in the sky all last week and five more days this week. So if you look out tonight at about 10:53, fairly high up in the sky, you'll see this bright star crossing the sky about the speed that high-flying jet aircraft cross the sky. So it takes several minutes to cross the sky. If it zips across in a second, that's a meteor or a shooting star. And if it's stationary, it's a planet or a star. But if it's moving, it's the International Space Station, especially at 10:53 p.m. tonight. So set your alarm a few minutes early, get the whole family out, because there are seven astronauts on board that space station. And they're not the only ones in space. China has three astronauts on board their space station as well. So there's 10 people in space at the moment. And we give the exact time to watch, and whether any craft are going up or coming down, you can see chasing the space station across the sky on our social media. We'll give the website at the end. The links to Facebook, Twitter, Instagram are on the bottom of our website. People should follow that, because it not only tells you about ISS, but is there an aurora predicted for that night from Ireland? And what else is visible in the sky as well? So the ISS, well worth watching. Get the kids out, might inspire them to become astronauts.
Brilliant. And I suppose, David, is there any other planets worth spotting right now?
Yeah, I mean, in the evening sky, you've got Jupiter very low down as soon as it gets dark. It's the brightest star, in quotes, in the sky, but it is getting quite low now. It's been great all previous months of this year. Mars is still fairly high up, but it's only as bright as the brightest stars in the sky, so you'll need to know which one that is. If you get Astronomy Island magazine, there's a big map in the centrefold, shows you the sky for that month, and you'll see where Mars is. And if you like getting up at 4:30 in the morning, you can see Venus. And there's a good reason to do that on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, because the moon is going to glide past it. And just to the right of Venus, which is very low in the east where the sun rises, you'll see a 200 times dimmer, but still visible with naked eye, planet Saturn. So the moon passes Saturn first, Thursday and Friday, and then it moves on Friday and especially Saturday to be closest to Venus. That'll be a really spectacular sight. If there was one morning, set your alarm for 4:30 a.m., it will be Saturday morning. You'll see the moon. There's a lovely diagram in Astronomy Island magazine for people who get it, and we'll show you that the moon, easy to spot, has Venus blazing away just to its lower right. That's definitely the highlight of the week. So I'll be setting my alarm for 4:30. Hopefully other people will too.
Brilliant. And I suppose, David, that comes to the end of our show. So, David, I'd like to thank you for all those fantastic insights. And don't forget tonight at 10:53 to look up for the ISS and set those alarms for the Moon Planet Meetup at 4:30 a.m. later this week. For more information, visit astronomy.ie. Clear skies, everybody. And that was David Moore, editor of Astronomy Ireland magazine. Thank you, David.